You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com. Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Every year, more than 25,000 deaths worldwide are attributed to this virus. Tragically, a very effective vaccine is available to prevent these fatalities, but are not being disseminated to those in need. You may think this international scourge is Ebola. Ebola was estimated to have caused the demise of about 11,000 persons in 2015. The disease I'm referring to is rabies, a preventable disease, one that affects people and animals. With your assistance, this disease can be eradicated. My guest is Dr. Richard Ford, an emeritus professor of medicine at North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine and an expert on rabies and its worldwide impact. We'll be right back after this short break.
It's DesignerPetSweaters.com, hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit DesignerPetSweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Large or small, we fit them all. DesignerPetSweaters.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Ford, appreciate you being with us today and taking the time.
Oh, glad to be here.
I think people are probably very shocked to think that rabies is still as big a problem as, you know, it's been for thousands of years. Tell us a little bit about rabies in general. What is rabies?
Well, rabies is a viral infection of mammals, which includes the land mammals and some of the flying mammals, like bats, and humans. So there's a large spectrum of those of us who walk on the earth and fly around it that are susceptible to this rather serious virus. You made an interesting point. Rabies was first mentioned as early as the Bible. So it has been around virtually unchanged for thousands of years. It's a fascinating story about its evolution and its ability to persist in the environment today.
So it's been around that long. I think people think of the dog that has hydrophobia, is salivating like crazy. What do people typically see with rabies? What are the signs?
The signs of rabies are quite variable. And Bernadine, one thing that I think your listeners should really focus on, and we should bring up, is the fact that this has traditionally been a dog disease. You mentioned 25,000 people, it's actually estimated to be higher than that, die of rabies globally every year. And the interesting facet to me is that the exposure to humans throughout the world is the dog. Therefore, the dog gets a lot of credit for transmitting rabies. And up until about the 1960s, in the United States, that was also the case. So the 1950s, were associated with a lot of dog rabies. Since then, the rabies immunization programs that have taken place within the United States, the requirements to vaccinate your pet dog, has dramatically decreased the incidence of rabies in the dog. But the interesting fact is, back to your point, the presentation, the appearance of a dog with rabies is associated with what has been called hydrophobia. And this is probably associated with the inability of a dog that's infected to swallow, and therefore they salivate a lot as they're not even able to swallow their own saliva. So it gives this foamy mouth appearance, hypersalivation, and the impression that this is stereotypical of rabies. While that still occurs, there are other forms of rabies. And in the United States, a case that I saw just the other day in eastern Tennessee was a dog presented to a veterinary hospital that had rabies, was confirmed to be exposed and infected, was literally unable to stand. It was more of a neurologic form where the dog was having difficulty standing, not foaming at the mouth at all. On the other hand, cats tend to be very aggressive. They don't foam at the mouth, but they can be very assertive in their attempts to bite anyone that attempts to handle them.
I think that's one of the things that is so hard. You know, you're talking about cats and the various signs. Many times on some of the listservs that I'm on and get information, oh, there was 20 people exposed to a rabid puppy. There was 15 people in whatever state exposed to a kitten, that it was a little feral kitten. They found it. They brought it in. It had these strange neurological signs, and oops, it had rabies. And now all of these people need to be prophylactically treated for it. So it just doesn't have to be adults. It can be these very young animals too. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it usually is the younger animal. And for your listeners' edification here, there's some recent data that has been published on this. And it's kind of fascinating to notice that the number of cases of cat rabies in the United States, now this is 2014 data, increased over 10% from 2013, while dog rabies confirmed cases seem to be in decline, cat numbers are actually rising. So your point about the kitten, the stray kitten that gets taken to school to show all their friends, turns out to be rabid and exposes 32 children in a classroom plus a teacher, is not only costly, but emotionally very scary.
What's so frustrating, now I'm here in California, you're in North Carolina, and it seems as though every state is a bit different as to, at least it seems to be the same for dogs. But for cats in California, it's not required that cats are vaccinated for rabies. So thankfully, most of my cat owners keep their cats indoors. And I said, even then, there's been incidents in our local area of a rabid bat flying into the house. The cat must have thought it was nirvana, because here is this bird that wasn't, you know, flying very well, and let's catch it and play with it and, you know, maybe get bitten by it. Why do you think it is, and are things trying to change, that cats should be vaccinated just like dogs?
You know, I'm really glad you brought that up. I think this is a really key point. We know from talking to veterinarians around the United States that the compliance among people who own cats in having them actually vaccinated for rabies is remarkably low. It can be as low as 10 or 15% of the population in certain areas. 10 or 15% actually get rabies, where 85 to 90% do not get the vaccine. So the issue is of great concern to anyone, should be of concern to anyone who owns a cat. When we write vaccination guidelines, and I'm on the committee for the dog and the cat, we are strongly encouraging that owners have both dogs and cats vaccinated against rabies, regardless of the laws. And it is interesting, in California, where there's a rather high population of feral cats, as I'm sure you're well aware, yet there's no state law. But we do know that in California, Los Angeles County, for example, does have a law for the vaccination of cats. So it will vary from state to state, but also the regulations vary within the state. So it can be kind of confusing, not only for the pet owner, but for the veterinarian as well.
Very frustrating. I know a lot of people listening to this hear the word vaccine, and there is such a pushback on vaccines. for children and many times for pets. Clients will come in going, I just don't like vaccines. I don't want to put this in my pet's body. You know, I have the 5-pound Chihuahua. It's going to be getting the same amount of vaccine as that 100-pound Great Dane. I would love to have your expert input on the frequency of vaccines, their safety, and the amount that's given.
Well, the rabies vaccines that are on the market today are remarkably safer than they were 20 years ago. There's been substantial improvements in canine and feline vaccines. So as far as the concern over injury associated with rabies vaccination, I have to say that it is not 100% free of complications, but certainly a very, very small number of animals do experience transient side effects similar to the frequency of children that experience side effects to vaccines. So the notion that vaccines are universally harmful in humans, Bernadine, you're correct. That has been conveyed and transferred to pets and pet ownership and concern among pet owners for vaccinating their dogs and cats.
I usually tell Dr. Ford, my clients, when they're concerned with vaccine reaction, I said, you know, most of the time, maybe it's a little bit of malaise, kind of like that small child being fussy after they get their vaccines. And they might feel a bit off for 24 to 48 hours, and then they just pop on back. And if somebody's very concerned, I'll many times give them a small complementary dose of a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, kind of like you and I taking Tylenol, which we can't give to our pets. And it really seems to kind of, okay, I can do that. But, you know, the concern of the frequency, most pets as an adult, that rabies is going to be given about every 3 years. Is that correct nationwide?
That is correct in all but a couple of states where the requirement, I think every state now does permit, and this is relatively recent, does permit the use of a 3-year rabies vaccine. Bernadine, there are some local municipalities throughout the United States that still mandate annual vaccine to be compliant with the law. So rabies vaccine must be given annually in certain cities or counties throughout the U.S. But that's going to be up to the individual health department to make that decision. But you're correct. For the most part, every dog and cat, starting at about 12 to 16 weeks of age, should receive their first dose of a rabies vaccine. And then the law recommends or requires a booster 1 year later. After that, the vaccine is traditionally or conventionally administered on every 3-year basis. And it is the only vaccine, we might want to add this, the only vaccine that a dog or a cat receives that's required by law, at least in most states. So it does have some emphasis, and there are some enforcement issues and liability issues that come with not vaccinating a dog or a cat, particularly if they should ever become exposed to rabies.
Talk about, before we get into exposures and incubation and testing, et cetera, the amount of the vaccine that's given. People have such a hard time wrapping their brain around the fact that my teeny chihuahua gets the same amount as the bull mastiff.
Oh, it's always, veterinarians ask the same question. It's a very fundamental, very good question to ask. And the bottom line is that, one, vaccines are generally not tested in different sized dogs. Cats, of course, are relatively uniform size throughout life, at least as adults. But the dog sizes vary, as you know, from 4 pounds to 200 pounds. So we've got this huge variation. But the data that's available today suggests, or at least indicates, that we're doing an adequate job. The difference in size is not a volume-related issue as it were for a drug, like an antibiotic. We're talking about an immune response to a protein that has to be processed, activated by lymphocytes, and then a product produced, which is antibody, in response to the activation of lymphocytes. So it's a fairly sophisticated mechanism that must happen. If you reduce the dose, it's possible that you do stimulate an immune response, but that response is below the protective level of immunity.
So that person that says, I have a little dog and I want you to give a half a dose, not the best thing to do.
It's not the best thing, and in fact, it could be deemed illegal. If that dog or cat were to be ever exposed to a rabid animal, the state or the county could deem that animal not immunized. And the consequences of that for the pet owner and the pet are significantly more harsh than they are if the animal is appropriately vaccinated.
So, Dr. Ford, people will say, why don't you just do a titer? I've been vaccinated for rabies every couple of years. I have my titer checked and it says it's protective. I'm trying not to get bitten by a rabid animal, but going, okay, I think I feel a little bit safer. Why is it not possible then for a dog or a cat to have a titer done?
Wow, Bernadine, you are tapping into a hot button issue today. I commend you for being on top of this. The bottom line is there is a very significant amount of research today, as we speak, being done to evaluate the correlation between a positive, what's called a positive antibody titer, and protection from rabies. Now, that is in a research mode. It is ongoing. The data looks pretty interesting right now. However, as we mentioned earlier, rabies vaccination is dictated by law. And in law, in state law today across the United States, a rabies antibody titer is not regarded as a legal index of immunity. So you can do a titer, a pet owner can pay for a titer, but in the United States, it has no meaning, and it can't be used to assess whether or not this dog or cat is protected. Now, when you talk about titers, anyone, and this happens quite often in California, as well as on the East Coast, people are moving their pets throughout the world. And there are some countries and regions of the world that actually require that a dog or a cat receive a titer result. Blood must be collected, preferably 4 to 6 weeks in advance of travel, and the individual dog or cat must be tested according to a specific protocol. The test must be performed at a certificated laboratory. There's only a couple of them in the United States. So that pet must pass a titer test, but that's only for exportation purposes. Inside the United States, the titer, today at least, has no meaning.
Good clarification. I'm speaking right now with Dr. Richard Ford, Emeritus Professor of Medicine in the College of Veterinary Medicine at North Carolina State University. Some scary things out there, such as rabies, so make sure that your pet is up to date. Ask your veterinarian. We'll be right back after this short break and talk about rabies on a national and international basis. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
So when we brought him home, we didn't realize that Bear, the rescue dog, was actually sick. He had very flaky skin. He was dropping a lot of fur, and LeVette wanted to do steroid injections, special dog food. Nothing seemed to work. So I've been hearing Dinovite on the radio for years.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
It never actually crossed my mind to try it until I was just at a dead end. And then it finally sunk in. Oh, you're talking about hair and skin. And all right, I'll try it. Well, it took probably 6 weeks, but after we started using Dinovite, no more flaky skin. He doesn't scratch and itch. And he started to put weight on. It was awesome. He makes us feel like we saved him. Every rescue dog in America deserves Dinovite for 90 days. I wish that we would have started the Dinovite right away. It would have been so much easier.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Are you having trouble getting the word out about your new pet product or invention?
Let Whitegate PR open the gate to your marketing and public relations efforts. We've been specializing in public relations in the pet industry for over a decade. From press releases to media relations and publicity to pet trade shows and launch events to social media, the pet-friendly team at Whitegate PR has you covered. If you listen to the wise words of Bill Gates, he says, "If I had $1 left, I'd spend it on PR." Learn more at whitegatepr.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Ford, before the break, you were talking about pets traveling, and it's so true that pets are literally going across the globe with their owners because, you know, we're not going to leave them home. If we're moving, they're going with us. There are certain countries that rabies is much more prevalent. I had the opportunity last year to be in China, and they've had a major, major problem with rabies, as I know you're well aware, to the point where they thought the best way to control it was to depopulate. Take these cats, take the dogs, and have them destroyed. And many of these animals were even, you know, owned. They were pet animals. Please address, what are some of the hot spots in the world?
Well, you mentioned probably one of the most prevalent ones, which is China. They have so many feral dogs and cats that there's nobody available to take responsibility for having them immunized. And the vaccines available outside the United States are not universally, let's say, recognized as efficacious or valued as an immunologic product. They don't do a very good job. And that's certainly been the case in parts of Asia. China, India is notorious, has a terrible problem with rabies. I've been in the Philippines, Indonesia. There is certainly rabies in the Philippines. I've spent some time recently, last 3 years, working in Brazil. And Brazil has a very significant issue with rabies due to the large number of favelas, the slums, the so-called slums in Brazil, and lots of stray dogs as well as cats. So in these countries that where rabies is prevalent, the dog has become a primary carrier, a primary reservoir of the virus. And because dogs have such close interaction with people, the risk for human rabies goes up significantly.
You were talking about reservoir, and we know that rabies, yes, affects people. They both can die from this. But I think what a lot of people maybe are not aware of is the effect that canine rabies in particular has on wildlife, such as in Africa. Could you address that?
Well, it is intriguing. I think we pointed this out at the beginning. And I really, it's one of the facts of rabies that really got me interested in promoting this rabies awareness initiative. And that is the fact that the dog is the primary reservoir for rabies throughout the world. And the fact that dogs are natural hunters puts them in contact with other mammals, wildlife. So their opportunity to interact, fight with, and transmit the virus. While the dog may die, the virus is passed to other animals that, in fact, may be non-affected hosts or reservoirs. Let me give you an example. Not all mammals die of rabies, although all mammals can be infected. And one interesting carrier, one interesting reservoir that impacts the United States as well as countries outside the United States is the bat.
Right.
The bat is capable of becoming infected with rabies. For example, in the United States, it's estimated that about 2% of the bat population across the country is infected with rabies. It's a relatively small number, and your risk of being exposed is certainly small. But outside the United States, there appear to be higher numbers of human exposures to bats, and the fact that the bat doesn't die of the disease. And the bat can be an incubator, if you will, a host of the virus for extended periods of time. A dog that is infected, for example, typically dies within 6 days. The last 6 days of its life is the only time the dog is actually transmitting rabies. So it's generally a very short period of time that the dog poses a threat. Yet, because of their association with humans, the dog is the principal reservoir for rabies throughout the world, the exception being the United States, where we have a robust, effective vaccination program.
Dr. Ford, how is this virus transmitted? We keep talking about bites. Is that the only way that it's transmitted? And what's the incubation period? You know, it was fascinating. It's just the last 6 days of that dog that's in the throes of a rabid infection is going to be infected. So when you incubate, it seems like many times you have a dog that goes into quarantine, and it's in quarantine for months sometimes. Why is that so?
Well, they're in quarantine for months. Let's go back to your point about the saliva. I think this raises an interesting point. Is it just a bite wound that transmits rabies? And it isn't. While bite wounds, which inoculate a person or another animal with infected saliva, is really important, some of the more fascinating cases have been of organ transplants in humans. Someone has received, for example, a kidney or even a cornea. A corneal transplant from a deceased individual transferred to another individual unwittingly transmitted rabies to the recipient from the donor.
How tragic.
And that's those cases are well documented in the medical literature. So it doesn't have to be exclusively a bite wound. And the other important thing is, and we take this very seriously when assessing exposure in humans, is if you have a cut on your hand or you contact the saliva and you happen, for example, to rub your eye, you may actually become infected through simply surface contact, the saliva to your eye. So it is very innocuous. It's a very subtle way that it can be transmitted. Bite wounds from bats, for example, are not necessarily painful. Many of the people bitten don't know they've been bitten.
I've seen pictures of what a bat bite looks like, and I get paper cuts that are deeper than that. The incubation period, what's the typical incubation period?
In a human, the incubation period for rabies is a very frustrating issue in that it can be years. It can be up 2 years between exposure and the development or the onset of clinical signs. Typically, the dog is much less than that. Typically, we think 2 to 6 months that a dog would start manifesting clinical signs of rabies after they've been exposed. But they only transmit rabies through saliva during the last 6 days or so.
Is that true for the cat also?
Yes, it is true of the cat as well. They transmit rabies on a very short spectrum of time toward the very end of their life. So that's the reason for the extended observation periods and quarantine periods. The dog is exposed to a rabid, for example, and you've probably seen them, Bernadine. You see a dog or a cat that's been in a fight with a raccoon or a skunk in California, and we don't know when this animal is going to manifest the clinical signs. It could be 6 months from now. And as a result of that, most states currently enforce a 6-month quarantine for any dog or cat that is exposed or believed to have been exposed, but the dog or cat is not currently vaccinated. You know, between you and me, I think this would be a tremendous incentive for anybody who owns a dog or a cat to have them vaccinated at the appointed interval.
It's such a good safety measure, and it's just that insurance that, okay, if something happens, it's going to be much better off. I believe there's been some recent AVMA, American Veterinary Medical Association, guidelines. Probably your group had a lot to do with it also. If a pet has been exposed, is up to date on its rabies vaccines versus not, and I'm sure that clients or right now listeners are going, but can't you just do a test? Isn't there a test for this? There's like a test for everything. Why can't we test for rabies?
really good point. And your point is extremely well taken. There is no test that is reliably diagnostic before death. There is a test of brain tissue, which obviously occurs after death, used to confirm infection. And those are the numbers that we talked about earlier. You know, in the United States, they've confirmed, if I look at the numbers here, or 2014, there were 6,000 animals that were confirmed to have had rabies. And of that, about 5,000 were wild animals, like skunks, raccoons, and that includes bats. But interestingly, about 300, a little less than 300, confirmed cases of rabies in the U.S. were cats. So it's a big issue, particularly for us out here in the eastern United States, where the cat is king with regard to rabies.
So scary. And there is really no treatment for this. How about if a person is infected versus a dog or a cat? Treatment for it?
There are some cases of humans that have been successfully treated. Bernadine, these are rare. Generally, today, rabies is considered a fatal disease once the infection occurs. And there are instances in which a person was put into a coma, usually a child, and managed for several weeks or even months, and survived. I think, at least in what I've read, the cases that I'm familiar with have been associated with some persistent or residual neurologic disease. So this was not a simply give them some pills or treatment and they get better. It's a very, very challenging disease to treat in a human. In dogs and cats believed to have rabies, if they are even symptomatic of rabies, the law is very clear. They will be humanely destroyed and tested. So there is no option for treating a dog or a cat that is believed to be infected with rabies.
So before listeners ever get to that horrid point, the safest thing to do is to get your pet vaccinated, even if it's totally that indoor cat, even if it's the dog that just walks the neighborhood, even if it's that old animal that wouldn't think of biting a soul. All of those animals, all those pets need, really must be vaccinated.
Bernadine, that's really sage advice. It's very important. It's part of, I think, the responsibility of being a pet owner includes vaccination. And I think rabies should be at the top of the list.
It's definitely part of that core. Dr. Ford, if people wanted to learn more about rabies, is there some place they can go?
We have offered a website for veterinarians, but it's available at no cost to anyone who's interested. This is a state-by-state look at rabies in individual pets, dogs and cats. And we've included ferrets as well, as many states have a requirement for ferrets to be vaccinated. This is www.rabiesaware.org.
Okay.
And on that, you can click on your state. We've got about 30 to 35 states completed now, and see what the laws are, what the requirements are at the state level. Understanding, as you pointed out, that some local municipalities can enforce stricter law.
Dr. Richard Ford, Emeritus Professor of Medicine, the College of Veterinary Medicine, North Carolina State University, thank you for a very enlightening conversation today. Hopefully everyone takes it to heart. Take those pets in, get them vaccinated with a very safe, very effective vaccine. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you very much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you that best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.